We're back. You know, these days, getting a good night's sleep seems to be as elusive as finding the fountain of youth. But if you want to be productive, mentally sharp, balanced, energetic, and live a full life, getting adequate sleep may be the golden ticket. Well, joining us this morning to share the Ten Commandments of how to get a good night's sleep is Dr. Robert Westlake, the Associate Chairman of the Department of Medicine and the Medical Director of the Sleep Center at Upstate University Hospital at Community General. Welcome, Dr. Westlake. Thanks for coming in today.
You're very welcome. Good morning.
So getting a good night's sleep is essential. Why is that?
Well, a good night's sleep is essential for your mental function and for many of your physical functions as well. If one is sleep deprived, one suffers in terms of attention span, ability to perform complex tasks, memory, and of course mood. We all know sleep deprived folks are cranky and irritable and generally not much fun to be around.
So what are the things that prevent us from why do we develop these problems with sleep?
Well, we find that folks who have insomnias, which are difficulties falling asleep and maintaining their sleep, often have a relative who has insomnia as well. So there seems to be a biological substrate on which insomnia develops. But there's a precipitating factor which causes you to develop insomnia, perhaps a financial stress or a family stress. And then once the insomnia is established, it more or less perpetuates itself.
So sometimes I've read things like they say that sometimes people who drink too much caffeine, for example, will run into that. And once it gets going, as you said, it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, stimulants of all sorts, caffeine, medications, nicotine, even alcohol will help to perpetuate insomnias. And in some cases, if you're sensitive, will precipitate the insomnias.
How about things you kind of alluded to, psychological kinds of problems? If you're depressed or you're highly anxious, whether it be because there's something external going on in your life or just your own internal processes.
Well, many emotional disorders and medical disorders as well will induce sleep interruption and sleep deprivation. One classic example is fibromyalgia. The sleep deprivation and sleep interruption in that disorder is so prevalent that we actually use sleep disruption as one of the diagnostic criteria.
That's interesting. And you alluded to the fact earlier that you said if a family member has it. So you said there's really a genetic component to this whole thing. It runs in families.
There is a strong component. When I see patients with chronic insomnia, I almost invariably find a first-degree relative who also has it.
How about things like medical problems? I mean, something like asthma or allergies, or do people have things like acid reflux causing it? I mean, do those also play a role?
Interesting that you raise those two particular issues. The folks with asthma tend to have their asthma first during the night. And often during the latter third of their night, they'll wake up coughing. And that may be a signal that the asthma is getting out of control. Acid reflux, by virtue of our sleeping posture, is a huge problem.
So even things like chronic pain, I would think, chronic pain syndromes or cancer, for that matter, or kidney disease, those kinds of things, if you have problems with your bladder.
All of the above, they all have an impact on your sleep.
It can be pretty harrowing then to get a good night's sleep. Also, I mean, the classic thing that we hear about all the time are these sleep disorders like sleep apnea, those kinds of things. Did they then lead to this kind of chronic insomnia problem?
Well, they generate a form of insomnia. We call them DIMS and DOES, disorders of initiating and maintaining sleep, and disorders of excessive somnolence, which imply inadequate sleep. Virtually all of the sleep disorders that have been defined have that as a final common pathway.
That's very interesting. So what are the Ten Commandments? I mean, what do you do given that there are so many different possible causes to having a bad night's sleep, what do you recommend people do?
Well, the Ten Commandments were derived as a way to teach people about sleep hygiene. And those are behaviors that will promote or damage sleep, things to avoid. They're based on the principles of biorhythms and the fact that your sleep is a rhythm. They're based on the principle that you can condition someone to respond in a certain way or another, conditioned responses. And they're based on stimulus control, where you try to avoid the things that would interrupt sleep. You're testing my memory and my sleep deprivation when you ask me to give you all 10 of them.
No,
but I'll try.
Yeah, all right.
The first commandment is to establish a consistent bedtime and rise time. That means you choose the duration of sleep that you believe you should have, and for most of that's 7 to 8 hours. And then you determine what time is your best bedtime. Some people are larks and others are night owls. For myself, it would probably be 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. You want to have sufficient sleep duration so that you can be well rested. And then you want to adhere to that schedule, bed at 11, up at 7, in order to reinforce the chemical biorhythm that your body has. Biorhythms are interesting. If you can repeat them, they are reinforced and strengthened. So the first step is always to eliminate the erratic bedtime and the erratic awakenings. Second step is to develop a sleep ritual that leads you into sleep. Most of us eventually develop a pattern of behavior between turning off the television and climbing into bed. We may go take medication, brush our teeth, let the dog out, and then retire to bed. Over time, that becomes a conditioning mechanism. The conditioned response leads you to believe as you go to the bedroom that it's time to go to sleep, and then when your head hits the pillow, out you go. So those are the first two. The third one is that you need to restrict your bedroom activity. Many people watch television, listen to the radio, late-night talk shows, do the computer now that we have wireless and laptops
or tablets
and so on. Those should really not be done in the bedroom. That becomes what's called an adverse conditioned response. You begin to believe that you should fire up your iPad when you climb into bed rather than putting your head on the pillow and getting to sleep.
And that kind of stimulates your system as opposed to allows it to go into more restful state.
In fact, that does. You need a sleep venue which is comfortable. And that's in terms of temperature, comfort of your bed. We've found in the sleep center that adjustable air mattresses are wonderful for most people who are having problems with their sleep. Everybody seems to be different in their needs for the firmness of their mattress. The temperature has to be correct, noise has to be excluded, light should be excluded. And then there are some who prefer a little bit of noise, and in that case you might want some white noise in the background.
Like those white noise machines.
Now the other 10 commandments, actually 5 of them, relate to stimulus control. There are 3 substances which are difficult for folks with insomnia. And those would be alcohol, nicotine, and caffeine. Alcohol initially makes you drowsy, as everyone knows, but within 2 or 3 hours it becomes a stimulant. And many who've had a little too much to drink remember waking at 3 or 4 in the morning and being very restless and unable to get back to sleep. That pattern can become permanent in those who drink heavily for many years. The caffeine is an issue for many people. Most of us get rid of the caffeine. We metabolize it within 5 or 6 hours. There are those who take 8 to 12 hours to get rid of their caffeine.
So in that case, what would you recommend in terms of the
typically we say take your last caffeine at noon or earlier, and especially if you're having insomnia issues. When we were young, I'm sure we all remember having coffee in the evening and being able to fall asleep without difficulty. As we get older, that's less the case. We don't sleep as deeply.
So basically what you're saying, I mean, did you have another thing you wanted to add to that?
I'm fine. I covered most of them.
Right. I think that the point that you're making is that regardless of what causes the potential problem with sleep, obviously if it's something like sleep apnea or something like that, you might have to address those issues. And clearly if you have any kind of medical problems, you have to address those issues. But in terms of just overall sleep hygiene, you need to set yourself up in an environment that is most comfortable, that you associate with sleep, and that you begin to kind of move yourself in a very rhythmic, coordinated way towards sleep every night.
And eventually that becomes a subconscious process. You should not have to lie there and consciously move yourself toward relaxation and falling asleep.
But in some cases, people have found things like deep breathing or relaxation or meditation, that kind of thing, can also be of help.
You've led me right into the therapy for insomnia. The collection of interventions to which you allude is known as cognitive behavioral therapy. And we try to teach people how to restore the way they approached sleep.
In other words, to retrain the pattern when they lost it, so to speak.
To retrain or entrain the pattern.
Yeah. So things like meditation actually can help in your experience. You've seen that.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. So there's hope for us, all those insomniacs out there. Is that the idea? And very briefly, just because we have only a little bit of time left, what do you think about the medications? Are those more hazardous than helpful?
Medications are useful, but we try to use them as a patch. We use them as a short-term solution, often to just reassure you that you are capable of sleeping well.
Because it seems to me there's been a lot of talk about people, in a sense, overdosing or using, you know, that can lead to some very negative consequences as well.
Any medication has the potential for side effects or bad consequences.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and sharing all this very, very helpful information with us. My guest has been Dr. Robert Westlake. He's the medical chairman of the Department of Medicine and the medical director of the Sleep Center at Upstate University Hospital at Community General. We're going to be right back, and we'll be hearing a little bit more about sleep problems, but this time in kids. So please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to HealthLink on Air on FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.